fellas.
This is White Sox Weekly, your two-hour all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Drive in the air, deep to right, it is gone!
This is a presentation of the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Good morning. Connor has play-by-play duties. My name is Jesse Rogers, sitting in for Connor, who will be along during this show in just a bit. I'll be here for the next 2 hours before pregame. Connor will have the pregame as well as the play-by-play. So we gave him White Sox Weekly off doing some musical chairs today. I was supposed to join Connor on White Sox Weekly, but now he's got play-by-play duties, so he's going to join me. Again, my name is Jesse Rogers. Good to be with you on this Saturday morning, especially after a White Sox win last night. Phone lines are open, as always, 312-332-3776. Is the number if you want to jump on. If you didn't get a chance to join Connor on the postgame show last night, here's your chance to sound off, but sound off probably in a good way. I mean, what we saw last night was a magnificent pitching performance by Michael Kopech, who went 8 shutout innings, gave up a lone single, which was erased by a double play. He faced the minimum. The White Sox faced the minimum, and they beat the Kansas City Royals 2-0. One of those old school games, 5 hits for the White Sox, just one hit, a one hitter for Michael Kopech. He was perfect through about halfway through the game, but gave up that lone single, and the White Sox came away with one of their best victories of the season. Again, my name is Jesse Rogers. This is White Sox Weekly. 312-332-3776 is the number if you want to jump on, talk about that game last night and Michael's magnificent performance, which we can credit to him having kids. Why? Well, let's give a listen to Michael Kopech with Jason Benetti and Steve Stone last night after the game.
I mean, it's a special one for many reasons. You know, I've had a rough start to the year, so this definitely helps me feel like I'm getting back on track. But also, a standout start for me last year was around the same time, and that was because my son was born a year ago tomorrow. So I feel like, I was able to kind of refocus on things that are important to me, and, that's this game, that's my family, and not let things get in the way. My last couple starts, I've been kind of getting wound up and, a lot of walks here and there, so I feel like just kind of settling back in and getting back to what I do is where I'm at right now, so I was comfortable with that one.
Michael, was there anything that told you in the bullpen before the game that you were going to carry wonderful stuff into the ballgame?
Steve, you know how those pregame pens are. So, I felt really good in pregame pens, and I've thrown horribly, and I've had really bad pregame pens and thrown great. Today actually was a pretty good one, so I was holding my breath. But I think I was able to kind of carry that out there today.
Michael, you talk about being a dad, and I see how important it is to you as you talk about it. Why is being a dad so important to you?
It's a separator for this game. I love coming to the ballpark and, competing with my teammates. But at the end of the day, there's something to go home to that's much bigger than all of this. And that's my fiance, that's my children. And to be able to have that and also be fortunate enough to play this game for a living, I'm very blessed.
Michael, remember one thing from this performance. It looked from up here like you were peaceful out on the mound tonight, that you had every emotion in your body under control from the beginning. You replicate that on a game-by-game basis, and you're going to be just fine.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Steve.
Last thing. Do you like when people talk to you during games like this? What was the process like as you were mowing down batters?
I tried to keep it as normal and as light as possible. So, from the first inning on, Sebi and I were talking about game plan between innings, and we continued that all the way through. So, we don't want to make anything feel weird or uncomfortable like that. So for the most part, it felt like a normal game. Hard-fought game, 2-0, so, yeah.
Happy birthday, Michael Kopech's kid. I don't know what his name is or what the scenario is, but the fact that his birthday's today, that helped him focus last night, apparently, according to that interview. So have more kids, Michael Kopech, and pitch more like that. He admitted to a rough start to this season. The whole starting staff, the whole pitching staff has had a rough start to the season, but lately it's been better. Lately it's been better, and yeah, the record's bad, but they're 7.5 out of first. Not insurmountable. Not insurmountable. Obviously, three teams above them. A little bit easier to make up 7.5 if you're in second place rather than fourth. But the point is, mathematically, it's not impossible, where most years at 17-29, you would feel like it is impossible. Now, Fangraphs gives them a 4% chance of making the playoffs, which weirdly, is higher than the Detroit Tigers, who are 20-22. They have like a 3.5% chance of making the playoffs, according to Fangraphs. The White Sox have a 4% chance. They're 12 under compared to the Tigers, 2 under. I mean, all that stuff doesn't mean a lot, right? It just doesn't. And we're far from talking about the White Sox getting back in the race. It's very doubtful just because of history, but it's not insurmountable based on this division. We know that. The leader in the division, the Minnesota Twins, 24-21. Detroit's in second at 20-22. The Guardians are third, 20-24. White Sox, 17-29. And Kansas City in last at 14-32. And yes, you can pile the two divisions on top of each other, meaning the AL East and AL Central. You can put them on top of each other because the fifth place team in the AL East would be the first place team in the AL Central. So it just goes 1 through 10, Tampa, Baltimore, Yankees, Boston, Toronto, down to Minnesota, Detroit, Cleveland, White Sox, and then Kansas City. It's incredible what's going on in those two divisions in particular. The AL East is amazing. Toronto in last place, tied with Boston at 25-20, with the AL Central leader, the Minnesota Twins, at 24-21. But you know what? We're far from needing to even look at the standings. The Sox just need to get back in it. And that's my first question of the day. 312-332-3776. The Sox can get back in it if, fill in the blank, the Sox can get back in it if, and I am going to steal your thunder right off the bat. And I'm also going to rate your answer. I'm going to rate your answer 1 through 5. 5 being the best, 1 being the worst. And yes, I am the judge and jury on this one. I'm going to rate your answer. The Sox can get back in it if, and when I say in it, I just mean in the division, right? I'm not expecting a 90-win season. Sox can get back in it if, fill in the blank. So we're already making the assumption they can get back in it, which is a long shot, but how can they do it? And I'm going to steal your thunder. I'm going to take the best answer. This is a 5. I can judge myself, and I give it a 5. If the starting rotation continues on what they've done the last week. It's as simple as this and as hard as this, because it's not easy to get 5 guys to just keep going and going and going. The great teams do it. But the White Sox last 5 games have produced a 2 ERA out of their rotation. They've walked 7 batters in 45 innings. Just go to MLB.com, click on the last 7 days, and that's what you get. I'm sorry, that's their entire staff, not just their rotation. 2 ERA, 7 walks in 45 innings. That's their entire entire pitching staff. Now, to drill down, it's the starting staff that really has to carry the day, right? The bullpen is throwing a couple 3 innings a night. Last night, just 1 inning. It's the starting staff that has to do it. If they stop walking the house, which they were doing, and continue on what they've done the last week, that's where the Sox get back in it. 7 walks and 45 innings pitched for this staff. This staff produced the only WHIP, which is walks plus hits divided by innings pitched, under 1 for the week. 0.87, because they walked only 7 batters in 45 innings. So there you go. I'll get even more specific. The White Sox can get back in it if the staff stops walking people like they've done the last week. 5 games, they've walked a total of 7 batters. Kopech didn't walk anyone last night. He went 8 innings, gave up 1 hit, 10 strikeouts, arguably his best game of his career. The fastball had life, had late zip on it, right? Threw in a bunch of sliders, a few changeups, but this was all about his fastball. The starting staff has been better. The entire pitching staff has been better. We know what Joe Kelly's done out of the bullpen. Kendall Graveman had a nice clean inning last night. Lance Lynn had his good outing. It just simply has to continue. It has to continue. But here's the thing. And here's the thing. Again, I'm looking at the glass being half full. I'm trying to find the positive here. Here's the thing. At least when Lynn throws the game that he did and Michael Kopech throws the game that he did, they remind us that it's possible they can do it. Because until now, I wasn't sure, right, if Lance Lynn had anything left in the tank. I mean, he had not had anything close to the game that he pitched the other day. And Michael Kopech, we know, has talent, but hadn't thrown anything close to this game. So it reminds us they have it in them, but they have to do it turn after turn after turn to get back in this thing. I know we always take parts of the schedule and say it's critical, but I think you'd agree with me. This stretch against in the division games is the way for them to get back in the division race. Because once you get to June, it gets back to a tougher schedule, right? I think we could agree the Sox probably aren't good enough to run through the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Mariners and the Rangers and the Red Sox and the Angels on the road, which they play all those teams in June. They can go 500 to go against those teams. But going 500 from here on out isn't going to help them. They need to go well over 500, and this is the time to do it. 2 out of 3 against the Guardians. Now you try to get 2 out of 3 or better against Kansas City, and then it's on the road against the division. It's still not easy. Still not easy. But if they play like they have this week, and basically since the 10-game losing streak, other than the 3-4 in Kansas City, I mean, that was bad. But, you know, they have shown some signs. At least that's the case. So the White Sox can get back in the race if fill in the blank. Now, the lineup is out today, Sox and Royals game 2, but there's been a change. They put out an initial lineup where Gavin Sheets was in it. Now, Gavin Sheets is no longer in it. Tim Anderson leads off. Benintendi's in left. Robert in center. Moncada at third. Vaughn is at first. Berger's DHing. He'll join us on this show in about 20 minutes. Jake Berger, I mean, that guy's the life of the party for the White Sox these days. He'll join us. Hanser Alberto is at second. Haseley gets a start in right field. Sebi Savala is doing the catching for the second day in a row. So it's Haseley in for Sheets, who was scheduled to play in right field. So before everyone calls up and starts screaming that Sheets isn't in the game like they did a couple days ago, I kind of made fun of those calls yesterday on Waddle and Sylvie's show. Sheets, who has 4 at-bats against lefties all year and has done nothing against lefties in his career, was on the bench a couple days ago, and apparently a lot of people thought that was the reason the Sox lost the game against the Guardians. Anyway, he was supposed to be in there today. He is no longer in there, and Grandel gets a second day off in a row as well. We'll talk to Jake Berger. We'll talk to Connor McKnight. We'll talk to James Fegan from The Athletic right here on White Sox Weekly, all between now and 12:30 when the pregame show comes your way. Game 2, Sox and Royals. Lucas Giolito on the mound against Jordan Lyles. Lyles is 0-7. This is a very, very winnable game. We know that Giolito's pitching well, but he has more in the tank. He has more in the tank. So coming off of last night, you want to see if maybe this thing's contagious. That was a question that was asked to Pedro Grifol before the game. You know, we like to use that word when it comes to offense and pitching, you know, contagious, things like that. I don't know if it is, to be honest. I really don't. I mean, if starting pitching was contagious, why didn't Dylan Cease rub off on anybody last year, right? If hitting is contagious, why hasn't Luis Robert really rubbed off on anybody else besides maybe Jake Berger this month, right? I mean, you get guys that are hot and you get guys that are cold. I guess if a few guys are hot at the same time, it can relax the whole team, and that can lead to some other guys getting hot. But I've never really believed in the whole contagious thing. That's just my opinion. Anyway, want to get your thoughts on all this, 312-332-3776. The White Sox can get back in the division race if you fill in the rest. Jesse Rogers here on White Sox Weekly, right here on the White Sox Radio Network.
Get weird with Waddle's World on ESPN Chicago.
Bring your family to a White Sox game with a family pack presented by Exxon Mobil. Your family will get 1 ticket, hot dog, drink, and chips to select games starting at $19 per ticket, Plus, with every purchase, you have a chance to win mobile gasoline for a year. Jesse Rogers back with you on White Sox Weekly. For tickets, by the way, visit whitesox.com/family. Sitting in for Connor McKnight, who will have the play-by-play today in a couple hours. And he joins me to preview the game and go through last night. Connor, how you doing, pal?
Jesse, always a privilege and an honor, sir. Not enough people tell you how good a guy you are, how handsome you are, and how good you are at your job. I'll tell you that much.
Well, the second part, for sure, they don't tell me. They do not tell me the handsome part. There's definitely
right.
Well, actually, they don't tell me any of those things. So anyway, good to be with you. I throw those compliments right back at you. Let's get right to it. You've been doing White Sox pre and post and play-by-play for a few years now. I know you can't really rank it 1 through 5 or whatever, but where would you put Kopech in, you know, the team photo of starts you've seen since taking over the job, really?
Well, I'll tell you what, thinking back through it, I was on the phone with my brother on the way into the ballpark today, and I guess I realized that I don't think, Jesse, I've ever seen a 27 up, 27 down game. Even Carlos Rodon's no-hitter, where he hit Roberto Perez in the pinkiest of toes, there was one extra base runner. That's as good as I've seen. You know, we saw Dylan work that near no-hitter against the Twins where he was absolutely dominant. Lucas has had his stretches, but I put Kopech right up there in the team photo. What was most impressive to me for Kopech, and this is not a knock. It's going to sound like it a little bit, but it is not. He was mostly a two-pitch guy, fastball and slider. And he did throw a curve, and he did have a change, but it was mostly two pitches. And with Kopech, that fastball is so good when it's on. He got in-zone swings and misses on fastballs against big league hitters, and that's just not something you can see a guy do with that kind of regularity. I think the called strike and whiff percentage, Jesse, last night was 42%, and a lot of that stuff with the heater. I remember talking with Michael on White Sox Weekly shortly after that real dominant start he had against the Yankees last year. And we talked about his fastball a lot. We talked about just how good it is. I asked him if he feels like when it's totally on that he can throw it and get it by anybody. And he kind of chuckled and said, well, not anybody. But, yeah, I feel good about it. And that's just kind of that pitch for him. That's why I think this organization, that's why a lot of us, you know, who watch this game with a slightly different view, really can't give up on him as a starter by any stretch, because that's in there and there's so much more growth for him when he develops. And I think he will, that slider and whatever tertiary pitch, whatever third pitch he wants to, you know, put into that arsenal, whatever works best. That's about as good as I've seen it.
No doubt. I think you hit the nail on the head. The really good pitchers in Major League Baseball can get guys to chase, right? That we all know. The great pitchers can get guys out in the zone, especially with a fastball, because that's, you know, should be the easiest pitch in some sense to hit. If you're a good big league hitter, you can hit 98, but there's different kinds of 98. There's 98 straight, and then there's 98 with zip and 98 with movement. He had that zip last night, and you don't need to be a pitching coach or baseball expert to see it and sort of feel it. If you're at the ballpark, there's a little zip, at the end, a little boom, you know, that it's just a different sound when it hits the glove, and he had it last night. Of course, you got to mix in some off speed, but he didn't need to do much. A few sliders, very few changeups, and I think you're right. This is the tease that you get out of a guy like him, where you say the ability is up there with, you know, almost anybody in the game, but it doesn't mean he's as good as anyone in the game. Certainly not yet. So maybe it's a sign of things to come. You know, he said he missed the spot on the base hit to Massey, but he missed it good enough that it was a good piece of hitting more than a bad pitch. He didn't miss it in the zone. He missed it out of the zone. So I give Massey more credit than taking anything away from the Kopech pitch.
Oh, no doubt. And you got to remember too, you know, Massey, you look at the season long numbers for Michael Massey, it was a really bad April, but he's hitting .317 with a four something on base here in the month of May. Like, he's been really good for the Royals down there in the bottom third of their order in this month. And I think there's a lot of people who would tell you he's above average for sure and good with bat to ball. The other thing too, Jesse, and Kopech mentioned it, you mentioned it here, and I think this is something we've been talking about with Michael a little while, and DJ talked about this too. When you miss to your advantage, don't miss to the hitter's advantage. And when Michael's given up, you know, five home runs in a ball game, four home runs in a ball game against the Reds, He's missed in the middle of the strike zone, and he's missed, you know, that makes a pitch fat, you know? And when you're missing off the edges, when you're pushing or pulling that pitch, depending on, you know, what side of the plate you're throwing to, that pitch toward the outside portion of the strike zone, away from the barrel of the bat, that's going to result in a ball that just barely gets over Andrew Vaughn leaping at first base. Could have really been something special last night, if not for, I don't know, Andrew Vaughn being 8 inches taller, perhaps. Yeah, that's really what this comes down to. When you're missing toward the middle of the strike zone, that ball's jumping out of, especially the smaller ballparks in this league, and that's where Michael has run into so many problems. It's truly been the home run ball. Yeah, the walks have been tough, and they've forced him out of outings or out of starts a little sooner than you'd like. But it is the home run that's gotten him into, you know, the majority of the trouble. He's got the stuff to work around walks. And certainly, you'd like to decrease both those totals at the same time. But if you're going to if you're going to be able to decrease one rather than the other, I'd rather drop the home run total, given what Michael's working with right now, by working toward the edges of the strike zone and see if he can get guys to chase and get through outings that way.
Yeah, before I let you go, I mean, just you mentioned a couple of his outings. I mean, just think back to the Reds outing and the first outing of the year against the Giants and the pitcher last night. It's like two different people. I mean, the stuff was just so much better in the mindset. And I played his comments after the game. He kind of said, look, it's my kid's birthday today. That kind of focused me in, calmed me down. I don't know. I said on the air, look, have more kids, whatever it takes, Michael. And I like what Steve Stone, that calm feeling you felt on the mound, take that with you 4 days, five days from now. And, you know, it really does feel like it's something between his ears more than anything in his arm for him to achieve greatness in this league. I think you'd probably agree with that, right, Connor?
I think that absolutely could be true. And I think there's something about, you know, we talked about this too, Jesse, I think a couple weeks ago. There's a basketball element to baseball sometimes. You know, shooters just kind of, when you're in a slump, you just kind of need to see one go in, and then you kind of, I remember now. Okay, I see how this works. And I think to a certain degree, pitching can be like that. You can, and Pedro's talked about this too, get aggressive in the strike zone. Sometimes the royal we, give too much credit to hitters. Like, hitting's really hard. It's really difficult. So throw the good stuff over the middle, let it work, and see what happens. I think there's an element of that, too, to what Kopech can bring, because that's if I've ever seen one, that is a challenge fastball. So let it eat, see it work toward the edge of the strike zone, and let these Royals hitters, you know, you saw one go in against a team, against an offense that's not all that great. See if you can take that kind of outing against a team that's got a better 1-9.
Yeah, I get it. It's easier said than done because, you know, you could say get aggressive in the strike zone. All of a sudden, you're giving up 5 home runs. You're giving up 4 home runs. And then you follow that up with nibbling and you give up 6 walks. You know, it's such a mind you know what when you're on the mound or at the plate for that matter. Connor, we'll let you go. Jake Berger's expected to call in, so I'm the lucky one that gets to talk to him. You get to talk to Darren Jackson in a couple hours. Enjoy the game today. We'll talk to you soon, pal.
I think everybody in that conversation is pretty lucky. Thanks, Jeff.
You got it, Connor. That's Connor McKnight. He's got the play-by-play duties with Darren Jackson. Let's pause 10 seconds for station ID.
Live from the Old National Bank State Street Studio.
This is WMVP WSHE HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
All right, I am promising you a Jake Berger interview shortly. Why don't we get rid of a break and come back, and hopefully he will be on the call. But before we do that, I got to read something for you. A White Sox 10-game ticket plan gives you the ultimate flexibility. Pick games based on your schedule and your budget. Don't miss any of the action in 2023. For more information, visit whitesox.com/ticket plans or call 312-674-1000. Jake Berger. Soon, he's fielding balls, hitting balls at BP, all that jazz. So we'll get to him in a few minutes. Also, fill in the blank. The Sox get back in the division race if you fill in the rest. Jesse Rogers here on White Sox Weekly on the White Sox Radio Network.
Berger, high and deep to left. It is way out of here. Another swing, another home run. It's 4-1.
One of his 10 home runs this year. That's right. Jake Berger has 10 home runs in 96 plate appearances, 86 at-bats. Amazing rate. home run rate for Jake Berger. Jesse Rogers back with you on White Sox Weekly. Let's go down to the clubhouse where the third base slash DH is standing by. It's the one and only, the man that looks like he's having the most fun on this team right now. It's Jake Berger. Jake, good morning. How you doing, pal?
Jesse, how's it going?
Good. Good to be with you. Thanks for joining us on White Sox Weekly. You've been on such a tear. We had to get you back on the show. 10 home runs in, like I said, 86 at-bats. Describe the feeling and tell me why it's happening. Did you just lock in after coming back from an injury?
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's no words to describe how I'm feeling. You know, I mean, it obviously feels good, and I want to help the team any way I can to win. And, you know, that's my first thought. And, you know, I think the reason why it's happening is, you know, I think I'm just controlling myself, controlling my emotions in the box and not trying to do too much. You know, I feel like I've always hit the ball hard. And, you know, sometimes I think over the last 3 years, big situation, I try and do too much. And, you know, I end up with a worse result than, you know, just kind of controlling it and staying in the moment rather than thinking about what possibly could happen.
It's funny because I truly believe that's what Michael Kopech did last night. He just kind of controlled his emotions and stayed in the moment. Mm-hmm. Talk about watching that performance. You don't see many of those throughout the course of a Major League Baseball season. They happen once in a while. That was quite something to view.
Yeah, it was beautiful. You know, he's always awesome to play behind when I'm playing third base. And, you know, he just brings this energy to the mound. And last night, you know, he channeled that so well. And, you know, he just attacked the zone and, you know, said, hey, like, if you're going to beat me, it's going to be a pitch in the zone and, you know, have at it. And, you know, he really controlled it. It was super special. And I'm always fired up for Mike because we rehabbed together during his Tommy John and my Achilles. So we got close down there.
No doubt. Everybody knows your story coming back from several leg injuries like that and performing the way you are. But let's talk about coming back from the latest one. It was like a minor oblique thing, right? I mean, it had to be minor because obliques can last weeks and weeks and months sometimes. I'm curious, when you came back, were you just, it was as if you were never injured, like you were 100% healed? Because I feel like that's the only way you can come back swinging the way you are.
Yeah. You know, I was fortunate with how fast it turned around, you know, after the first day when it happened. I was nervous because you hear about obliques all the time. You never know how long they're going to last. And I was fortunate that it turned around pretty quick and got back to my normal self, went on a rehab stint, had good games down there. You know, we played two in DH1, played third one. And, the day I played third base, there were about 45 minutes between my at-bats each time, it felt like. So, you know, it let it cool down and see how it would feel if I was playing the field for a long time. So, yeah, I was really fortunate with how quick it turned around.
Visiting with Jake Berger right here on White Sox Weekly, Jesse Rogers with you. All right, I mentioned at the top when you came on, you seem to be having the most fun on the team. I don't know that for sure, but at least publicly it looks that way. Am I close at least? I mean, tell me how you're feeling. I don't mean to compare you to anyone else, but I just, there's a smile every time you're on the field, it seems like.
Yeah, baseball's supposed to be fun, and that's what I'm always going to do, is just to have as much fun as I can, because it's easy for this to turn into a job when it's really a game. And, you know, I view it as a game, and I'm fortunate to be playing it and fortunate through my story to be able to be out there every single day and doing what I love. So I always just try and have a smile on my face, have as much fun as I can. And, you know, everybody's having fun. So I can't say that I'm having the most fun, but definitely up there.
Everyone knows this home run celebration with the jacket and the hat. Why do I think that you wear that home every night? I just feel like that fits you so perfectly. I mean, your wife, other people must say the same, I'm guessing.
Yeah, my wife thinks I look like the Hamburglar. So, you know, I wish I could take it home and wear it. It's definitely my style, but, you know, it stays here. And throughout the year, obviously, it's going to be shared amongst all of our teammates.
Now, I got to be honest, when you tripled the other day, I just assumed, even though I've watched most of your games, I just assumed that was your first career triple. But you've actually had a triple each year you've been in the big leagues,
yep.
Right? One in each year. And then you gave the eye signal when you look in the dugout like that? What's all that about?
So we do the check mark, you know, you're checking a box, and then I go to the eye, and that's for the eye pitch. It's the machine we're using, and you know, that's the kind of like our inside joke with the eye pitch, and we have like a little crew. Everybody's using it, but we have the lab rats. It's Gavin Sheets, Andrew Vaughn, and myself, and then Chris Johnson kind of feeds the machine for us. So that's kind of our like inside joke, little sure. post hit celebration.
That's awesome. Visiting here with Jake Berger on White Sox Weekly. So tell me about triples. You've had three of them. When do you decide you're going for third? I mean, how does it work for a guy like you that's probably not going to hit a ton of them? It's easy to pull up at second, but what? Give me the thought process in the moment.
Yeah, I'm going to play the game as hard as I can, no matter what. And when I know a ball's not going out of the yard, I'm going to be hustling out of the box as fast as I can. And you know, I came out of the box hustling hard. I was thinking two, maybe three, and then I saw the ball kick off the fence a weird way. And once I saw that kick, I'm like, I got three in the bag here. So, you know, just stay the course. It's really hard to go from, you know, a slower start where, you know, it's going to be a coasting double to getting going to go to three. You know, it puts yourself at risk of injury and stuff with your hamstring. So I've always been under the impression that it's easier to slow up than get going halfway through the run. So I'm going to bust my butt getting out of the box, and you know, whatever happens happens. And once I felt the opportunity was there to take three, I was already at full speed.
Yeah, that's interesting. So go hard all the way. Once you start slowing down, you stop at second, kind of think. You like to slow and then start up again. That's where you cause problems.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I think there's a lot of plays that you see where guys, you know, go from slow to fast, and you know, they end up tweaking something. So that's kind of my thought process always.
All right, Jake. So now we got to get serious. 17-29. I know you weren't there the whole time. You know, there were some, you know, the 10-game losing streak and things like that. It does feel a little bit better. I don't know if you guys look at the standings. You tell me if you do. But do you ignore the record and just look at, okay, 7.5 out of first is not insurmountable, even though 17-29 doesn't look pretty on paper?
Yeah, I mean, I think you just have to look at the day you're about to conquer. You know, you just take it day by day, pitch by pitch, and go from there. And, you know, obviously this week with the Cleveland series and then Kansas City, and then we go to Cleveland and to Detroit are pivotal for us. You know, a lot of division games in a row, and, you know, we feel we can win all those series, and, you know, just keep going day by day. You know, you can't look too far into the future. You gotta look at right now, and you know, not try and look at the 116 or whatever are left. You just have to take in the day and go from there.
Hey, I want to ask you about playing third and DHing. This allows you and Moncada to play at the same time when you're obviously both healthy and everything. Is that something? I mean, you come up through your career, you're playing. You're probably pitching. I don't know what you did in high school and, you know, little league, but you know, you're the best player on your team. You're probably not DHing much. And then you get to a point where sometimes you have to DH. Is there an adjustment? Does it impact your hitting when you're only DHing? Tell me about that transition, fielding as opposed to DHing.
Yeah. Obviously you're not in every play. You get however many half innings off, you know, kind of evaluating your at-bats and whatnot. It's easy to kind of get lost and looking at mechanics and stuff when you do have that downtime, as opposed to where you're playing defense. You got to be present there, and then, you know, you roll into an at-bat. But, you know, I enjoy it. I did it a couple times last year, and, you know, I've always kind of enjoyed DHing, especially you know, here and now that we have it on the road, we have the eye pitch to work on. And, you know, you can kind of face any pitcher and, you know, you get to work and keep your body loose. So, you know, I've kind of enjoyed it. And, yeah, it's one of those things that's definitely hard to conquer. But as long as you have a good routine and, you know, you stay locked in rather than getting too lax, you know, I think it's like any other position out there.
Last thing for you, Jake. I know you got to get ready for a game. All right, I mentioned like looking at the standings, but are you a guy that knows your stats? Do you know? Do you go to MLB, ESPN, Baseball Reference? Do you know your stats daily?
Not really. No, I don't really look at it. I think my dad and my wife are the two stat nerds with it. But you know, for me, it's an at bat.
Yeah,
you know, I kinda
sure.
look at one at a time.
Do you not want to know them? Do you not look at them when they flash them on the scoreboard? Or is it impossible not to know them?
It's kind of impossible not to see them. You know, you see them, but you try not to take too much stock into it. You know, sometimes the tidbits on the board, whether it be like exit velocity or whatnot, are fun to look at and think about. But other than that, I don't really try and look into it too much.
All right. Well, then I don't mind telling you 1,000 OPS is pretty good and you're over that. So keep that up. How about that?
that's the goal. My wife always tells me she wants it to stay over 1,000 throughout the entire year. And I'm like,
well, they'll be giving you a trophy if that happens. They will be
exactly.
giving you a trophy.
Exactly.
So I like those lofty expectations by your wife. And I'm sure you have them for yourself as well. Jake, thank you. Keep this going. The Sox need a bunch of wins. I know it's only one at a time, though. Thanks for your time today.
Yep, thank you.
You got it. That's Jake Berger, White Sox third baseman and DH. If you want to react to anything he had to say, feel free. 312-332-3776 is the number. Jesse Rogers with you on White Sox Weekly. Let me get to another read here, and then we will take a break. Sox fans head to the ballpark on June 3rd as the White Sox take on the Detroit Tigers at 110. The first 10,000 fans, 21 and older, will receive a White Sox bucket hat presented by Leinenkugel's. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. We'll continue on with White Sox Weekly, about another hour and 15 minutes left in the show before we hand it off to the pregame show. James Fegan's going to join me. We've already heard from Jake Berger and Connor McKnight, who's got the play-by-play. And, of course, we want to take your phone calls at 312-332-3776. Starting back up with that question, the White Sox can get back in the division race if what? You fill in the blank. Back in a moment on the White Sox Radio Network. Always wanted to watch batting practice? Well, now you can. Don't miss your chance for an exclusive pregame experience to watch the White Sox and visiting team take early BP. This offer is only available for three select games, May 29th versus the Angels, June 21st versus the Rangers, and July 5th versus the Blue Jays. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/BP. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Jesse Rogers filling in for Connor McKnight. He'll be back for the play-by-play. Jeff Miller has the pregame show in about an hour and 10 minutes. White Sox and Royals, game two of their series. Jordan Lyles, who's 0-7 against Lucas Giolito, who's pitched well enough, right? He's been good, 2-3 on the season. Well enough to keep them in the game most of the time so far for him. So you like to see the White Sox score a bunch of runs off of Jordan Lyles, who's kind of a journeyman type of guy, right? So here's a chance to win the series right off the bat. And continue on from there. White Sox 17-29, and are 7.5 game out of first place. Minnesota Twins continue to lead division at 24-21. 312-332-3776. If you want to chime in on anything you heard from Jake Berger, or if you want to answer or fill in my question, you know, the White Sox can get back in the division race if fill in the blank there. What needs to happen? I mentioned just continue to zero in on the pitching staff and not walking guys. Their stuff is good enough to win games. Don't give up so many free passes, and that's what they've done over the last week. 7 walks in 45 innings. Make the other team earn it. I think if they do that, that's the way back. It's not the offense. The offense is going to be spotty. It's a little bit redundant. It's a little bit, you know, all or nothing kind of stuff. Like, it's not, no team really gets back into a race because of their offense, because it's hard to be great offensively for weeks on end. It's a little bit easier to get 5 guys, easier compared to offense, I should say, not easy, but easier compared to getting the, it's easier to get 5 guys kind of rolling, 5 guys that are your 5 best pitchers by definition, who most of them make a lot of money. So here we go. Lynn's had a good outing. Kopech's had a good outing. Cease is getting there. He's getting back to the old Cease. Giolito is sort of getting there. That's the way back to respectability here. And the boost that Garrett Crochet could give, we saw him finally return, and potentially Liam Hendricks, that could continue to lock down the back end of the pitching staff. Speaking of Hendricks, I watched his live BP yesterday. Ethan Katz spoke on it. So did Pedro Grifol. It looked good to me, but I'm no expert. He was cursing up a storm, but that just, I mean, that could be good or bad. Not sure. He didn't speak to reporters. I think he wants to wait until he's a little bit closer. They're not ready to activate him. So let's get the whole feel of this thing from Ethan Katz yesterday talking about Liam Hendricks.
He's building up. It's kind of like his spring training. We're just kind of getting eyes on him and getting him ramped up and kind of seeing where everything goes. It's something where, you know, you don't want to rush it. It's a situation that nobody has much experience with, what he dealt with, and we just want to make sure that we do the right thing by him and himself, like, to take care of him and get him on track when he's ready. We saw some nice adjustments that we talked to him about, and we're gathering more information. It was a positive day. I mean, it's day by day. We have some stuff that we need to go through tomorrow, give him the information, and also kind of give him time and kind of, you know, evaluate this properly and see where it goes. I think the criteria is when he feels good, he feels ready, and when we feel he's in a good spot to go out there and perform at a high level, then that time, that'll be the time. Being around him for 2 years, like, his springs are always a little bit slower. And, you know, it's not just him, it's most guys. So this is a spring training. He did a lot of work earlier, but, you know, it still is ramping up, and, you know, it takes a little bit of time. Plus, there's also different levels with the adrenaline of a big league game that we also are factoring in and thinking about, but we want to make sure we give him enough time to really hit his stride and be out there and put the best foot forward. We're talking to our medical team about everything, and they've talked a lot to a lot of specialists and getting all the information, but, I mean, I think it's just a lot of it is how he's doing, how he's feeling, and just kind of going day by day with that.
So a little unclear when he'll be activated, not quite ready yet. Maybe the velocity's not there, just the sharpness, the recovery. Like, it's just not all there just yet for Liam Hendricks. I don't think it's anything to be concerned about. This was always going to be an imperfect process. Returning from cancer isn't the same as returning from an injury where you can sort of predict the date and all that stuff. So it's probably going to be a little bit longer. It would be nice if he could have been activated this weekend and be in there with the home crowd. We'll see. There's no reason to speculate. It'll be ready when he's ready. But you think about the boost that Crochet and Liam Hendricks, if they're near or get to their top of their game in short order, along with the way Joe Kelly's pitching, as long as he continues. We saw Graveman with a good outing. Like, that could turn into a strength. Who knows? 312-332-3776. Because it definitely was not a strength early on, right? Where Ronaldo Lopez was thrown into the fire. I mean, really, every high leverage situation. And there were moments where he looked good, but he doesn't have the experience there, and he gave it up a bunch. Now you can push him back a little bit with these other guys coming back and not have to give all that pressure onto his shoulders, or put all that pressure on his shoulders, I should say. Let's go to JR in Kenosha. JR, you're on ESPN 1000 and the White Sox Radio Network. It's White Sox Weekly. What's up?
I just want to say thanks for having me on taking my call, because I was in agreement with what you were saying a minute ago about what it takes to get back in the division. As when these relievers come back, we'll be able to have some strength in the bullpen and move Lopez around, like you said. And we also, I believe we got three good starters that can handle their own business and their pitching when it comes to Giolito, Kopech, and Cease. And then if you put the dream lineup I'm looking for us in when everybody get healthy would be Anderson, Vaughn, Robert, Jimenez,
Eloy. Yeah.
Yeah, Eloy Jimenez, Machado, and then maybe catcher Silva or either what's his
Grandel.
Name?
Grandel,
right. And then, right. And then to put Berger and Sheets at the bottom, and it's gonna be lights out.
Could be. I mean, it hasn't really been lights out for a while, but I guess we haven't seen them healthy for a while. I mean, when Eloy comes back, you just have to cross your finger nobody else goes down. I mean, can you imagine finally seeing this lineup at its full health and with the addition of Berger?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
From top to bottom, it's you can't pitch around nobody.
Yeah. So maybe that the Sox can get back into the division race if they're healthy, which is something we've said for 3 years.
Right. The deadline can get stay healthy and play for a stretch of about at least a good 30 to 40 games. Man, we might have something to work with. Cause we owe Cleveland. They should be inspired for the fact that Cleveland Indians came here and swept us in our own house, took a picture with jailhouse uniforms on in our own house, and disrespected us. They should be on the top of our list to whoop they natural-born ass.
Okay, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, good stuff. Jesse Rogers with you on White Sox Weekly. 312-332-3776 is the number. Join us tomorrow for Family Sundays presented by Coca-Cola at Guaranteed Rate Field. Bring your family out to the ballpark for a day full of fun. Tickets start at just $10. Visit whitesox.com/Sunday to purchase your tickets today. We'll take more of your phone calls on what the Sox need to do to get back in the division race. Division race. Okay. Fangraphs says they have a 4% chance of winning the division. The Twins at 75%. I don't know how they come up with these numbers. It's a definitely a long shot. There's no doubt. But 7.5 out in May feels like you could have a better than 4% chance. But, of course, their run differential doesn't necessarily say that. Their season-long statistics doesn't necessarily tell you that. Their record doesn't necessarily tell you that. But it is only 7.5, and it is the AL Central. Right. And the top team is only 24-21. So I feel like it's still kind of wide open, at least for the top four teams. I mean, I don't think Kansas City can win it, but it's a long shot for the White Sox. Just let's face it. But you got to go day to day. No doubt about it. 312-332-3776. The number, you can tweet me at Jesse Rogers, ESPN. We'll talk to James Fegan from The Athletic coming up. We'll find out exactly why Gavin Sheets was scratched. I want to stress that he was scratched today so I don't get angry callers like I heard the other day when he didn't start against a lefty and people thinking like that's the reason they lost against the Guardians because Gavin Sheets, who doesn't hit lefties, who doesn't play against lefties, didn't start. I heard multiple callers and I made fun of them on Waddle and Sylvie's show. Yes, I did. I'll admit it. Because that was meaningless. In fact, if he had started, I think you should have called and complained because his numbers against lefties, and it's not a large sample size, aren't very good. So it was weird to hear callers complain that he wasn't starting against the lefty. Now he got a little injured. We'll talk to James Fegan about that as well. Jesse Rogers with you on White Sox Weekly. This is the White Sox Radio Network. James Fegan from The Athletic joins me at 11:45. This is White Sox Weekly, hour one done. We've got another hour left in the show before we go to the pregame show with Jeff Mellor, play-by-play by Connor McKnight, and your color analyst today, of course, Darren Jackson. That's all coming your way at 12:30. 312-332-3776 is the number. That last caller I had before the break had me thinking. I mean, this is dreaming in a sense, right? Because this team just hasn't been healthy in a long, long time. But they're really just down Eloy Jimenez, right? Elvis Andrews out of the lineup. But you know, of the key guys that have often been injured, it's Eloy Jimenez. When he comes back, if everyone's healthy, how does this thing shake out exactly? At this point, you have to keep Jake Berger in the lineup. Now, if somebody gets cold, of sort of the non-core guys, of course you can push them to the side. But right now, Jake Berger has to be in the lineup. Yoan Moncada is the better third baseman, and he is still hitting .317. He needs to be in the lineup as much as possible. Now, you'll mix and match and get Moncada off his feet day game after night game like they did the other day. And Robert, same thing. Like there's places to sit guys. But when you need your full lineup, how does this work with Eloy and Berger and Moncada? I mean, it's a good problem to have, but we got to figure this thing out. I mean, one of them's going to have to sit every day, right? You don't want Berger. I mean, this guy's got 10 home runs in 86 at-bats. But you can't really sit Moncada that much. Not this year. The last year I would have sat him. Not this year. So how does this work with those three guys? You know, you have the DH, one of them at DH, you have one of them at third, but, you know, Aloy's there too. Do you stick Aloy in right field more often? Is that the answer? And you mix and match, you know, the tough righty, you put Sheets in right, and Aloy at DH, and you sit Berger. Like, how does this work in your opinion? It's a good problem to have, but you got to get these guys the right amount of at-bats. 312-332-3776. So how's that rotation work? You do have right field to play with, but, man, I would not be putting Aloy Jimenez out right very often. So it's really it's some sort of weird rotation there with Moncada and Berger at third, Sheets in right, except in those moments where you want all of them in the lineup and you do put Aloy in right field. But I don't feel comfortable putting him in right. Speaking of Aloy Jimenez, recovering from that appendectomy, let's listen to what he had to say on how he feels now and when he might be back. Here's Aloy.
How are you feeling?
Feel good.
Yeah.
Feel really good.
How do you feel compared to a couple weeks ago?
Well, a couple weeks ago, I thought I was going to die, so I feel really good.
Just a real bad pain on your side? Or?
Yeah, it was really, really bad. But now I feel good.
Just kind of take us on through what happened. When did you start feeling the pain? And just take us on through the steps that happened after that?
Well, just 7 a.m. I wake up throwing up. And my whole my ass hurt. And it was bad. I can't even see or lay down or stand up. It was really bad for a moment. I really thought I was going to die, but... now I'm here and I feel good. I think I'm going to be back quicker than what they say. Feel really good, feel really comfortable, and everything going well right now.
Start hitting pretty soon, maybe the end of the week? Or
maybe.
Want to?
Yeah, I want to do it right now, but, you know, it's a process, and there's a couple of boxes that I need to check first.
I mean, that's kind of scary. He said several times he felt like he was going to die. Now, I've never had a problem with my appendix, thank God, but boy, maybe some of you out there have. I've never heard it described that way. Maybe I just haven't heard people talk about it, right? Because you just don't. It just doesn't happen all the time. But boy, that's scary stuff. So hopefully he's back as soon as he can be, but not too soon. You know, I mean, don't rush yourself back after what went on with him. But that's Aloy Jimenez talking about the issues he had and his return. Felt like he was going to die. That's scary stuff. 312-332-3776. Let's go to Sam in Des Plaines. You're on ESPN 1000 and White Sox Weekly. What's happening?
Hey, how we doing? Just talking about some White Sox rotational stuff. I was thinking, why can we not put Jake Berger over at two when Moncada's clearly shown that he can be a better third baseman. Sheets is playing better ball when he's getting consistent at-bats and right. I'm just thinking putting Berger at two would, I think, fix a lot of issues. You know, Elvis Andrus isn't the end-all be-all at two. I don't know. Just something I've thought about. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks for talking.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting concept. In the old days, meaning last year, when they had the shift, it would be probably more of a debate or conversation because you can help them over there. I just don't know if you could put Jake Berger at second without the shift and everybody on the infield dirt and all that stuff. And Andrus is pretty good, right? Yeah, I mean, he's a middle infielder for his career. And he's looked good at second base, but I don't disagree. You want Berger's bat in there more than Andrus. I'll ask James Fegan that. I feel like it's come up. Maybe it came up last year when they were talking about keeping Berger and Moncada in the lineup together, and Grandel was DHing a lot, and I think it may have come up last year. I can't remember. I feel like there's been a conversation within the White Sox or, you know, La Russa, whatever, Hahn last year. I don't know if it's come up this year, but I'll ask James Fegan, who covers the team on a daily basis, about that as well. But I like the idea of trying to get them all in the lineup and keeping Aloy as the DH. I just don't like Aloy playing the field all that much. But I don't know if you can have a defense up the middle of Tim Anderson and Berger. I just don't think that's possible without the shift. But I'll ask James Fegan about that from The Athletic coming up in just a few minutes. 312 332-3776 is the number. This is White Sox Weekly on the White Sox Radio Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Jesse Rogers here filling in for Connor McKnight. He'll have the play-by-play of the game about an hour and 20 minutes from now. Jeff Mellor will have the pregame show at 12:30. Learn from the pros this summer at a White Sox summer camp presented by Wintrust. Starting at $159, kids ages 5 through 12 can register for a camp at any of our 45 locations throughout the Chicagoland area. To learn more, visit whitesox.com/play. All right, 312-332-3776. Again, the phone number. You can tweet me at Jesse Rogers ESPN. Let's head out to the phone lines and our guest for this hour. It's James Fegan from The Athletic, who wrote a story last night headlined, White Sox Michael Kopech has everything working in career best performance. He certainly did, James. Thanks for joining me this morning. I guess the first question would be, what impressed you the most, considering you've seen and been around basically every start of his career?
He probably started with saying no walk, so that definitely jumps out. The fact that he had his slider really kind of hammered a lot of the season, it seemed like he really found one. He went away from that trendy kind of sweeper pitch to something that was really kind of hard and short and tunneled well with his fastball, but more than anything, he could actually command it and throw it for strikes. And, after watching him kind of struggle to get his velocity up all spring, to see him sit upper 90s all night and be able to really, be consistent mechanically to have his top velocity. I know you asked for one thing. I just listed four, but that was the kind of night he was having.
Yeah, for sure. You wrote about the slider. I think you and Pedro were having a conversation about the slider pregame, if I recall. But it really was that fastball that set everything up. I mean, you can have the good slider, but if you don't have the fastball, I mean, in Kopech's case, I mean, if Cease has his good slider, he doesn't need anything else. If Kopech has his great fastball, he doesn't need much else. Of course, you have to have a little bit something. But was it mechanical tweaks that kind of gave a little bit more life to that fastball?
I think so. I mean, as you're right, with Kopech, it's almost just throw enough off speed so that the fastball plays as much as it should. Talking to Ethan Katz, it was really about he can't get into his front side too early. He can't kind of drop on that end and start, falling down toward the mound too early, because then he takes some of the leverage and the force that he has in his back leg away from him. So it was kind of a mechanical key that he had to stick with. You've seen it really kind of, even when he struggled, he hit nearly 100 in an otherwise kind of difficult start against the Rays last month. He's had the upper 90s band pretty consistently over the last month. So once he kind of got himself in the zone, the power has been in that pitch to play up the way it did last night, obviously against a bad offense, but it's still been a weapon that he's had consistently, at least from a physical standpoint, for the last several weeks, I would say.
James Fegan from The Athletic joining me here on White Sox Weekly. So let's go a little bit bigger picture. What I think I learned over the last week, just kind of very simple, is that Michael Kopech and Lance Lynn still have something in the tank. Now, when I say still have, I mean Kopech should have a lot in the tank. Lynn is maybe nearing the end of his career, but my point is they at least showed us they can twirl some good outings. They proved that just in their last ones. But can they do it consistently? I don't know. Can the five-man rotation do it consistently? I don't know. Do you see any signs that maybe this was a six-week extended spring training for this starting staff? Are there any signs of consistency coming with these guys?
I talked to Lynn the other day, and his last start was against the Guardians team, also one of the worst offenses in the league, and that night didn't have Ramirez or Naylor. I think he left early in that game. But talking to him after, he said, that's the best I've felt, at least mechanically and physically in my leg, since the surgery. Which is, big talk, because he had a pretty good second half last year, and it seemed like he had got himself right. But he felt like he still had mechanical bad habits, that he was still kind of spinning off and cross-firing and wasn't straight to the plate, wasn't trusting his legs to be strong like the way they were before he had to go under the knife. So for him to say that, I thought that was meaningful. He didn't think it was a finished product. He still thinks a lot of work to do. He also even offered that him looking good at WBC was more about hitters being off-timing than him being really sharp. But if he's saying he's feeling better now, and that that this is a meaningful milestone to him, and he sees the action on his pitches returning, yeah, that's meaningful. He's not going to, you know, face the Guardians every night, but if he's feeling like he's back to himself physically, at least to where he was a couple of years ago, that was a really good pitcher. Even if he's a guy who's obviously long in the tooth, and we don't know how much longer he has left, just because, you know, how many guys pitch into their high 30s, early 40s. But, you know, he's saying he's kind of a little bit breakthrough. That's something worth watching a little bit.
And Cease seems to be taking the right steps to sort of getting back to dominant Cease. He's not quite there yet, but the trend is better. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I talked to him as well. He said he thinks he's about 75% of the way there. He thinks he's got 25% left of getting back to the ceiling of what he can be. He's been working all year, kind of staying close in his delivery. He's been opening up his front shoulder, which he thinks more than anything is kind of given hitters a longer look and being able to lay off some of his sliders a bit more than we were used to seeing last season. But the last two starts have been progress, maybe not breakthroughs, but he thinks he's on track, and he thinks there's a lot left he can still untap. So if that's the case, that's huge for him. This is not an offense that's been super consistent. They need these guys at the top of the rotation giving him nights like last night where there's just, you know, any offense at all gives him a W.
Yeah, for sure. Visiting with James Fegan from The Athletic on White Sox Weekly. I had a caller, and I mean, it's pie in the sky dreaming right now that to think this offense can be healthy for a period of time. But let's say Eloy comes back and they are healthy. Have you thought about how they would deploy Berger, Moncada, and Jimenez? Would we have to see Jimenez more in right field? That's dangerous. I'm sure you agree with that. But is there any thought that Berger could play some second base, or would that be impossible without the shift?
They've said it's pretty much a non-starter without the shift. And, you know, watching what the second base has to do this year, I think it'd be pretty taxing on him. Grifol has, you know, made it pretty clear that Berger's hit his way to have a spot here. He's going to have a role. Right now, it's easy to put him DH, but yeah, I think it's clear that Eloy is going to play some right field when he comes back, and Pedro has said as much. It's easy right now when they're facing left-handers to say, like, all right, Jake's DH, Gavin fifth, and Eloy's out there in right field. But the big question is whether it's right-handers, what you do. I think Jake's proven that he's pretty viable against that. That's typically where you give Gavin Sheets starts, but I think Eloy takes priority over both of them in terms of how the White Sox see it. And it's a question of putting Berger and Sheets' playing time at odds with each other a little bit more. And, you know, I would probably lean Berger right now, but I know they kind of want to involve both. But again, we're talking about the White Sox. Usually these situations of too many healthy players resolve themselves pretty quickly before any trauma really ensues.
Yeah, like, well, today, you know, well, not that Sheets is in the mix in those guys, but like today, something popped up with Sheets. What did Pedro Grifol say? It's a little wrist thing?
Well, basically, when he drifted off the second base last night and got, you know, thrown out, he was rushing back and he jammed his right wrist trying to slide back into second. So he's terminated as minor. Obviously, we've seen wrists, especially with hitters, linger, a day or two, but Pedro's at least trying to put it positive and saying, like, maybe even Sheets could pinch hit today. I think it's more like if they had a pinch hitter, Yasmani Grandal, who's supposed to play tomorrow and is supposed to be good to go, would be the guy. But I think they're just trying to minimize concern and say, like, hey, he can play today.
Right. I like what they're doing with Grandal. I know he's banged up a little bit, but I like the combo. Zavala has proven himself now. He's no longer just some young, you know what I mean? Like, he's established, and I think get Grandal off your feet. You know, he's a little banged up, but in general, you keep that bat a little fresh. You know what I mean? I like that combination of Zavala and Grandal in the playing time at this point. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, definitely pitchers love Zavala. I mean, I think Giolito has worked with Zavala all but one start this year. The one start was the blow-up start in Pittsburgh, so there's a lot of rapport they can lean to. I think he's definitely the mold of a backup catcher where you kind of put him in the ninth slot and just know that the defense will be on point, which is kind of his reputation at this point this season. But, you know, Grandal, I thought everyone was kind of going too over the top of how much the shift fan, which opened things up, but it's turned Yasmani Grandal into a 300 hitter. So maybe we can't underestimate it at all.
Yeah, unfortunately, Kyle Schwarber is a 175 hitter without the shift. So who knows? Like, it's just Ryman. Who knows what will make the difference for a certain hitter? James Fegan from The Athletic for another couple minutes. James, let's look at some big picture. Okay, let's be realistic. Like I've been saying on the show, Fangraph says 4% chance of making the playoffs. If they don't, if they're far out of it in July, Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams have to think about moving on from some players. It's just how it works. But I do think it would be a retool, not a blow it up situation, meaning only the guys that are pending free agents would be on the move. So I have two part question. Do you agree with that? Would only be the pending free agents, but also there's a couple pending free agents that have options. So those are sort of in between questions, right? If things don't go well, we know Giolito would be on the block. I think you'd agree. But with Tim Anderson and potentially Liam Hendricks be on the block, not many teams trade for starting shortstops unless there's a major injury. But I still think you have to at least examine it, especially when it comes to Liam Hendricks. So give me your overall take on all that as the trade deadline is still a ways away.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is a team that kind of, you know, went kicking and screaming into the rebuild, you know, was it 6 years ago now? I don't think they'd rush into one. I don't think Jerry is primed up to overhaul everything and start from scratch again. That seems unlikely. And I think they certainly have to listen on Tim because it would be, you know, it's where you're going to get this big offer where you can really restock your farm system. It's where you're going to have suitors like the Dodgers involved. It's going to be too enticing of a proposition just from a value perspective to just close yourself off to it. But at the same time, if you do move him out, this has basically been your franchise player. Is that setting you back too much that you can't retool? I think if you had a healthy season from Colton Montgomery and it looked like he was knocking on the door to be your new shortstop, maybe that changes the equation a little bit. But now he's at a point right now, he's missed all the season with a back issue. You don't know how much he's going to play. You're hopefully he can make up time in the AFL. I don't think you're necessarily going to see him in AAA and say, like, hey, maybe this guy is ready to take over the spot and we can think about life after Tim in a big way. You might be setting how much you can compete in 2020, 2024, a little too far back. You start moving pieces like that. Liam Hendricks, maybe it's just so up in the air because I don't know when he's going to pitch or what he's going to look like at this point. So I don't know what the market would be for him. I think guys like with an option like Joe Kelly, I think it would probably be someone I'd put in that group of, yeah, definitely he could be moved because, one, he's just throwing so well right now. He'd be such a major piece. This is probably the best point you can get value. And I think, if anything, that option here would sweeten the offers that you get. You're offering teams a little bit of extra control for a guy who looks like he's, you know, at the top of his game at the moment.
Yeah, at the moment. That's the problem, though, with relievers. The trade deadline's so far off that it could change. I mean, I'm sure Rick Hahn would love to see him pitching this way in July because that's what teams look at. Like, it really is about July when it comes to, like, relievers especially. Not as much with hitters, I guess, but you need to be kind of hot at the time of near the trade deadline. But, yeah, Kelly would – but, you know, closers are so valuable at the end of July. I mean, it's a big assumption that he comes back and he's great and the White Sox are willing to trade him during this, you know, coming back from what he did. But – in a normal year, Liam Hendricks would absolutely be on the block. But, of course, in a normal year, maybe he would have helped this bullpen and they wouldn't be 12 under 500. Right, James?
Right. A normal year, I think, it's a definite consideration. I think it would be a little bit of an odd footnote to the best comeback story of ever. Yeah. He was traded a couple of weeks later because the team was 10 games under.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that they only want to retool, most likely, means they need him for next year anyway, right? At an okay price, they could use the closer if they want to compete next year. So I agree with you. It's probably doubtful he's moved. James, thanks for the time. We will continue to read you in The Athletic. Great wrap-up of Kopech's outing last night. Appreciate the time.
Appreciate you having me.
You got it. That's James Fegan from The Athletic. I'm Jesse Rogers right here on White Sox Weekly. Let's pause 10 seconds for station ID. All right. Before we break, let's open up the phone lines. We're guest-free for the final half hour of White Sox Weekly. I know a lot of you are driving to the park. If you want to sound off on anything that James Fegan had to say, I had Jake Berger on earlier. Maybe you heard him. Talk to Connor McKnight in the first hour. If you want to talk about any of that stuff, feel free, 312-332-3776. I want you to also fill in this sort of saying here. The Sox can get back in the division race if you fill in the blank there. And anything else you want to talk about with this team? It's White Sox Weekly. We do this once a week. We only talk White Sox for 2 hours. We could talk about the division as well, of course, but this is your chance to talk about it. A little bit better play lately, a little bit better. They still have to show us a little bit more to really believe that they can get back in this thing. 312-332-3776. Final half hour of White Sox Weekly coming up next. Jesse Rogers with you on the White Sox Radio Network.
Yes. Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago.
Sox fans, join us June 4th for Yoga Day at the park, presented by Guaranteed Rate, before the Sox take on the Tigers at 1:10 p.m. Each $50 ticket package includes pregame instructed yoga on the field, a game ticket, and a co-branded athletic towel. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/yoga. I'm sure our executive producer, Brendan Riley, will be on the field for a little yoga on June 4th. I can't wait to see that. 312-332-3776 is the phone number. Let's get the phone lines going here. Last half hour of White Sox Weekly is all yours. Although we will replay a little bit of Michael Kopech's interview with Steve Stone and Jason Benetti on NBC Sports Chicago last night. I did it at the beginning of the show. I want to do it here at the end. I thought it was a good interview. It really was as much about the mental aspect of the game for Kopech as it is his arm and the physical stuff, which has always been the case for him. It's the case for a lot of players in this game, especially pitchers, but hitters too. The mental part is just equal to the physical part. I want to play that for you after that magnificent 8 shutout innings of one hit ball by Kopech last night. The best start of the year and certainly one of his best of his career, if not the best. So we'll replay some of that, but I want to get to the phone lines. Anything on your mind? White Sox Weekly, this is your show. 312-332-3776. Owen in Willowbrook, you're next up. What's happening, pal?
Hi, Jesse. Yes, question. What do the Sox have to do to get back in the race? And I like your fact about they haven't been walking guys, but the other things I think they have to do, improve situational hitting and catch the ball. And I think the way this roster is built, if they're healthy, they got too many DH-type players.
Right.
And I actually think the Sox, in 2004, they made a big decision and traded Carlos Lee, who would pound the ball, not a great outfielder, and they got Pesednik. And I think this team needs to do something like that. And they're going to have to look at guys like, well, Grandel's going to be gone. You're going to have to look at Sheetsberger, Jimenez, and maybe package him with a Lopez to get a second baseman who can get on base with Anderson, because you know as Anderson gets on, the Sox usually do well when Anderson's in the game. So if you get a guy that can be a top of the order guy at second base and package somebody like that, and I hate to say it, but I think getting a guy back from the Cubs like Madrigal and maybe the Cubs throwing a Gomes to improve a catcher, if we move those guys, I don't know if the Cubs would be willing to do that to improve their bullpen. But I think they have to do something like that to let one of them go to improve at second base, to improve their situational hitting and defense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I almost wish they could do it in season here. It sounds like you're talking about the offseason. I kind of wish they could do it before the deadline. It's not unheard of to sort of make a trade that helps both teams for this year, right? Most of the time, the trade in July is a seller, right, that is not contending to a buyer that is contending. But if the Sox are kind of within 5-6 games at least, you know, maybe you can retool it to a other team that still is in the race. Does that make sense? Because you're right, there probably is, when healthy, which they never are, a little redundancy with these DH types. Maybe you could trade one of them for more of a defensive player at second or defensive player in right field. So I'm with you. What do you think about that, doing it in season?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it'd be nice if they can do it in season, because you know the division's weak and they may not, you know, they're behind and they got some makeup to do. I mean, they're still 3 games behind third place, I think. But
yeah.
I mean, you got to do it a little at a time. But I mean, I think if you can pull it off in season, the division's weak. I think now's the time to strike. I don't know if Han will pull the trigger. I don't have a lot of faith in Han, to be honest with you. But I think that would be the move to do something like that.
Yeah, I agree, and I can understand not having all that faith, Owen, because, and he would admit it, it was a nice moment in time where this rebuild was working, but then it stalled, and he's the head of the guy, you know, he's in charge of the rebuild, and if it stalls, it's on him as much as it is anyone else. But there certainly is enough blame to go around if this thing doesn't work, this rebuild doesn't work. Let's go to one of our favorites, Ron on the South Side. What's happening, Ron?
Hey, Jesse, always a pleasure talking to you and listening to you. Real quick, you got to get Tim Anderson going. Jesse, I heard, I believe, yesterday that Tim Anderson has not hit a home run since last May. Now, we're not saying that he's a big hit, but just overall, a little more offense, his RBIs are down, and he's in that number one spot. But got to get in defensively. But more importantly, you were talking about, man, that was a performance by Michael Kopech. So you have to get that starting pitching. And LeFou did say it, that he believed the strength of this team would be pitching. So I think, Jesse, the offense will be pretty good. And it goes without saying, we mentioned pitching, you have to play a little better defense. But I think, really, starting pitching, you know what, Jesse, I was thinking back on the 83 season when the Sox were actually 500 in Memorial Day. And they just caught fire in the second half. And it was mainly their three pitchers went 35-5. That set the tone for them. So that's it. I'm just trying to be optimistic that they can get some good pitching going, and they should kind of hopefully get back in.
Ron, I said it all last year. That was the way out of it last year, starting pitching. It's the way out of it this year, even more than the bullpen. The starting pitching has to take charge. The offense, most offenses are up and down in this day and age, right, with so many good pitchers. There's a few that are consistent. But their way out of this mess is not their offense. It's through the pitching and through those five starters. That's it, Ron. You know, there's no other way to say it. That's the way to win games and go on a run. All right, thanks for the call, Ron, as always. And I don't disagree, obviously, with your premise about their offense in terms of Tim Anderson. 254 batting average, 292 on base, 298 slugging, 590 OPS, 63 OPS plus. This is a guy that hit 300 four seasons in a row. You have to imagine he will get better in that area. I don't care about the power. Don't care about Tim Anderson's power. He's a leadoff hitter. But he gets on base a lot more. That will help this offense. Sometimes I feel like maybe he takes his offense to his defense, like we saw this week a little bit, right? I don't know if that's the case. Who can necessarily prove that? But he's got to get going back to right field, doing the things Tim Anderson does best. I have faith he will after hitting, again, 300 in four consecutive seasons. So that would be a huge plus for this offense to get a little bit more consistent. Let's go to Tim in Munster, Indiana. Tim, you're on ESPN 1000, the White Sox Radio Network, and White Sox Weekly.
Hey, Jesse, I always appreciate your work. That's the first time I got a chance to talk to you.
Thanks,
but
pal.
I've got a few thoughts. I got to thanks. You're welcome. I have a few thoughts on the Sox and what they need to do. Even if this team could win the division, this team is just not good enough to get to the playoffs, and they're not going to make any big moves or big splashes, I believe, before the trade deadline, kind of like Atlanta did last year. So I think you really have to look at this window with some of the players that you do have under control and start trading some of the duplicate base pieces and do it sooner than later. In other words, Giolito, you've talked about him. Yes, absolutely. If Lynn keeps pitching well, maybe at the deadline you can move him. Grandal, I would put on the injured reserve right now, get him healthy. He's a left-handed or switching catcher. Again, somebody might need that at the deadline. And you look at Sheets, he's a duplicate player. Like the guy, love him, but he's just probably not an everyday right fielder, and they've got DH tied up, quite honestly, with Eloy, that they're not going to be able to move even in the offseason because of all the injury history. So you got to keep Berger around, because you're only going to keep Moncada for one more year. You can't trade him next year because of his contract. The White Sox missed the trade market in 21 and 22. Quite honestly, if you look at the free agent list, it's horrible. So they're going to have to do this through trades. So what do you got to do? You've got to bring in some tradable people that you gather from other teams, because we don't have the farm system to make some moves in the offseason. So you can still retool this team for 2024 and 2025, but they've got to do something right now.
Those are great points. They really are, Tim. I think you're right. No one has an appetite to blow it up unless they change the front office. Then a new front office might. And I agree with you. They really aren't going to give out any prospects because they don't have that many anyway. And the redundancy allows them to say, hey, we got to move somebody. I don't know. It might be Berger. It might be Sheets. It might be Monk. I don't know. There's all sorts of pieces to this thing. But I think the premise of what you're saying is correct. You change the dynamic in there. You change the makeup in there a little bit. Maybe you get a little bit more defensive, even though you give up potentially some power because of the redundancy you're talking about, Tim. I think you're on to something, and you absolutely have to move the pending free agents because you got to get something back to help the farm a little bit, if not major league pieces, to help you now and in the near future.
Yeah,
I think
did not,
yeah.
we did nothing with Rodon. You know, we did nothing, you know, with some of the other guys that have been, you know, we watched Abreu walk out the door. I begged for them to trade Abreu when we were not going to come back last year. That would have been a move that you could have got something because he was red hot in August and September. So
yep.
You got to do something.
Yep, good call, Tim. Good call. And that's where Raycon's scouts, starting in June, really have to fan out. Major league scouts, the guys that look at the minor leagues, and they'll if they're out of it in July, they need to rework this thing. But it's not going to be easy because you're not going to blow it up. And you have major decisions on contract options. I mean, Liam Hendricks and Tim Anderson are affordable, but they could be trade options. Like, you got to look at everything. It's a complicated puzzle when you're trying to retool. It's easier when you blow it up. You just, like they did the first time, you just trade anybody and everybody. Chris Sale, okay, go. You know, and you get back as much as you can. But when you're trying to retool on the fly, much more difficult. 312-332-3776 is the number. A couple lines have opened up. Feel free to jump on. Finish this statement. The Sox can get back in the division race if what has to happen. Give me a ring on that. We'll play some Kopech when we come back as well. He was fantastic last night, and I thought he gave a great interview with Benetti and Stone as well. This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000 and the White Sox Radio Network.
Everything you need for your outdoor fun. More importantly, it's the quality of the products we sell, and our product experts can answer any of your questions. And right now, during our Memorial Day sale, you can save up to 50% and get 0% financing for 60 months. Plus, free delivery and our lowest price guarantee. See store for details. So come see us or visit us online. American Sale. Bring the fun home.
Making it to the show requires skill, dedication, and years of hard work. But at ETI School of Skilled Trades, you can go pro in as little as 7 months. Whether you're looking for a career in welding or HVAC, at ETI, you'll get hands-on training to master the skills employers are looking for fast. Financial aid is available for those who qualify. This is your call-up. Visit eticampus.edu or call 888-830-7678 to learn more. ETI, it's your future. Own it.
Get everything for your automotive needs with 11% off at Menards. Pennzoil offers superior synthetic motor oil. It can get you better fuel economy and protects your engine to keep you on the road. Grab a 5-quart jug of Pennzoil synthetic motor oil for just $15.99 after 11% rebate at Menards. Good through May 21st. Savings are a mail-in rebate. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Save big money at Menards.
Carmen and Yurko, noon to two weekdays, ESPN Chicago.
All right, welcome back to White Sox Weekly. We are in the stretch run here. Jesse Rogers with you till 12:30, and then Jeff Miller has the pregame show. Connor McKnight and Darren Jackson have the play-by-play for you. Game two, White Sox and Royals coming up at about 1:10. That's first pitch. And trying to win the series right off the bat here, just like they did against the Guardians, win those first two games, and then think about a sweep. If they get anything like they did last night on the mound, they should get a victory out of this one because Kopech was amazing. Giolito's turn today. He'll face Jordan Lyles, who is definitely beatable with an 0-7 record. Well, let's go back to last night. Kopech, 8 innings, 1 hit, 10 strikeouts, gave up just that one little single to Massey. Fastball down inside the zone, and he muscled it out to right field in the sixth. Boy, he was rolling. Ended up getting out of that inning with a double play. Graveman had a 1-2-3 ninth. For the White Sox, face the minimum. One hit on the night for the Kansas City Royals as Kopech won his second of the season, reduced his ERA to 4.83, so still pretty high, but maybe, just maybe, he locked in and found something. He talked about it with Steve Stone and Jason Benetti on NBC Sports Chicago last night. Give it a listen.
I mean, it's a special one for many reasons. You know, I've had a rough start to the year, so this definitely helps me feel like I'm getting back on track. But also, a standout start for me last year was around the same time, and that was because my son was born a year ago tomorrow. So I feel like you know, I was able to kind of refocus on things that are important to me. And, you know, that's this game, that's my family, and not let things get in the way. You know, my last start, my last couple starts, I've been kind of getting wound up and, you know, a lot of walks here and there. So I feel like just kind of settling back in and getting back to what I do is where I'm at right now. So I was comfortable with that one.
Michael, was there anything that told you in the bullpen before the game that you were going to carry wonderful stuff into the ball game?
I mean, Steve, you know how those pregame pins are. So I felt really good in pregame pins, and I've thrown horribly, and I've had really bad pregame pins and thrown great. Today actually was a pretty good one, so I was holding my breath. But I think I was able to kind of carry that out there today.
Michael, you talk about being a dad, and I see how important it is to you as you talk about it. Why is being a dad so important to you?
It's a separator for this game. You know, I love coming to the ballpark and, you know, competing with my teammates. But at the end of the day, you know, there's something to go home to that's much bigger than all of this. And that's my fiance, that's my children. And to be able to have that and also be fortunate enough to play this game for a living, you know, I'm very blessed.
Michael, remember one thing from this performance. It looked from up here like you were peaceful out on the mound tonight, that you had every emotion in your body under control from the beginning. You replicate that on a game-by-game basis, and you're going to be just fine.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Steve.
Last thing. Do you like when people talk to you during games like this? What was the process like as you were mowing down batters?
I tried to keep it as normal and as light as possible. So, you know, from the first inning on, Sebby and I were talking about game plan between innings, and we continued that all the way through. So, you know, we don't want to make anything feel weird or uncomfortable like that. So for the most part, it felt like a normal game. You know, hard-fought game, 2-0, so, yeah.
Good stuff from Kopech Jason Benetti and Steve Stone on NBC Sports Chicago after that masterful performance last night. Just great innings of one-hit ball. And you heard him talk about being a dad, and it's a separator. You know, you get away from the game, and you let it sort of be in the past, right? A bad outing, you kind of put it in the past, and you go home and you see your kids, and you don't think about it. In my case, I get off the air, I see my kids, I want to get right back on the air. I want to get right back to work. I don't know what it is about my kids compared to his kids. They calm him down. Mine aggravate me. I don't know what to do, Brendan Riley. It's the opposite of a separator for me. Of course, I'm only half kidding. Only a couple of them annoy me. 312-332-3776 is the number if you want to jump on. Here's a tweet from Scott Merkin from MLB.com. It's like they were listening to our show because we were talking about what exactly you do when Eloy comes back. I mean, it's still far enough away that maybe it'll work itself out. But if everyone is healthy, such a capital IF on if everyone's healthy, where do you play Berger? Where do you get these guys in the lineup? Where do you play Eloy? Well, here's Pedro Grifol, according to Scott Merkin's tweet, on Jake Berger possibly working in the outfield. Quote, I actually thought about that yesterday or the day before. We've talked a little bit about it. We're not there yet. Those are discussions you really have to put some minds together and see what's best, not just for him, but for us. So I like that conversation, at least, because any conversation that doesn't involve Eloy playing right field is a good one in my mind. I have nothing against Eloy, but I think the better chance of keeping him healthy would be to leave him at DH. Now, Jake Berger's had leg injuries in the past. We all know that. So I'm not sure he's a 100% better option in right field than Eloy, but he's probably at least a little bit better of an option. Elvis Andrus is going to be due back soon. Would you put Jake Berger at second? Maybe in previous years when you had the shift and you could help him out there, but I'm not sure you want him there. You know, I don't know if second would be good, would be better health-wise for him than right. Right might be better than second. I suppose there's less like stopping and starting and weird movements in right than second, right? Trying to turn the double play. But I like the thinking of trying to keep Moncada, Berger, and Eloy in the lineup at the same time. Maybe we will see Berger in right. I'm not sure it's going to work out any better than Gavin Sheets in right, but at least have the conversation. But as James Fegan said to me, usually with the White Sox, these things work themselves out. That's the nice way of saying there's always an injury around the corner that will put a player on the shelf and then everyone else can play. But we're with Elvis kind of working his way back and Eloy, like, they're as close to being completely healthy as ever. But again, they're one game away where someone goes down and you're not going to get Moncada, Eloy, and Jake Berger in the lineup at the same time. And if you do, it really is a lineup and a roster which should bash their way to wins more than win it defensively, right? It's not like a lot of stolen base threats when all healthy. Not a great defensive group when all healthy, but should be a very lengthy and powerful lineup, which against certain pitchers is still not going to do well, right? But against other pitchers, they should put up some big numbers. So that's why I say, even if everyone's healthy, I can't rely on the offense to get them into contention. It really has to be on the mound. It really has to be on the mound because there are a lot of sort of similar power type hitters in that lineup. So against certain pitchers, they're not going to have success. If a bunch of your hitters can be gotten out in similar ways, there are pitchers out there that will expose you. But then there's others that you're going to be able to just mash against. And those are the ones that they'll put up some crooked numbers against. In any case, I'd love to hear from you. Just final moments here, 312-332-3776. Do you think there's a way to get Berger and Eloy and Yoan Moncada in the lineup that doesn't completely destroy your defense? Right? You can't completely destroy it. I guess that music means we're out of time, so I can't hear from you on that topic, but it's certainly one worth talking about here on the radio in the coming days and weeks as Eloy heals up, and just cross your fingers nobody else goes down. So we've run out of time on White Sox Weekly. Thanks to Jake Cantu, Kevin Zipak, and of course our executive producer Brendan Riley. We've got White Sox baseball coming up next. Jeff Miller with the pregame show. Connor McKnight, Darren Jackson with the call of the game coming up at 1:10 p.m. Again, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with 2 hours of White Sox Weekly right here on the White Sox Radio Network and ESPN 1000. So long, folks.